It's my deep pleasure to be able to introduce our guest speaker to you this morning, Reverend Deborah Olive. She was ordained in 1993 as a Unity minister, and she served in two nearby churches south of us, as well as a couple of churches towards the eastern part of the United States, and that's where she lives currently. She is on the advisory board of the Association of Global New Thought, and in 2009 and 10, she hosted the radio broadcast, A World That Works, on Unity FM. She served on many boards and teams, including the Seattle team for the Hunger Project, the Association of Unity Ministers or Unity Churches Northwest Regional Team, and as chair of Unity Worldwide Ministries Spiritual Action Ministry Team. And she's founder of A World That Works, which is a spiritually inspired social action ministry, and that's the focus of her workshop this afternoon from 1 to 3 p.m. in the Friendship Room. And I'm sure she will tell us more about it when she's here on the podium in a few minutes, in a few seconds. I'm going to be in the workshop myself, and I sure hope you're able to join us. It's going to be fun and a very, very deep experience for us all, I'm sure. So please help me in giving a big Unity of Bellevue welcome to Reverend Deborah Olive.
It is so wonderful to be with you here today. And I have been here in Unity of Bellevue on a number of occasions. I've never had the privilege of speaking with you. And it's just really a pleasure to share this time with you and to serve for Nancy while she's in Hawaii. And you know what? Our weather is so good here. I'm glad I'm here and she's there so I can be here, if you know what I mean. So what a wonderful time on the planet to be alive. People are waking up all over the place. And even though we truly have issues on the planet that are soul size, we have so many people, so many organizations, so many ways that Spirit is unfolding and evolving through us, so that each and every one of us, no matter where we are on our walk of life, if we feel called, we can move in a small way or a big way. And you know, really, God's not measuring. So whatever moves in your heart, that is your way to serve the world. About a year ago, I chose to leave this area to go back to my family of origin. My father was ill. And I had not been back there for more than 4 or 5 days at a time for over 30 years. I was called to that work. At the very same time that God said, you know, I asked the question, if I could not fail, what would I do? And it was to bring a spiritual social action ministry into the world. And at that very same time, I'm getting a call to go back to my family of origin. And so I've been back right outside of St. Louis for, it's been about 8 months, 8 months now. And, you know, that's God's way of expressing spiritual social action in me now. So I share that with you wherever you are in your life. Sometimes it feels like we're stepping along through life and there's this big disruption almost, a shift from where we are and to go someplace else. And I am here to say it's not a disruption. It is, when we're listening deeply to Spirit, it is your unique soul path. It's part of waking up. And it doesn't mean that we're shifting from what we're here to do. And so a part of what I believe each and every one of us are here to do is to express that living Christ presence. We'll do it with our family. We'll do it with our work. How many of you feel pulled to do something beyond your immediate community and to bring that out into the world? Do you have people who feel that way? That's God's nudging to us. So Monday of this week was the beginning of the 15th annual season for nonviolence. Have you all been involved in this? Yeah. So this season for nonviolence is a grassroots initiative. It's education, it's media, it is giving people and organizations a way to open up and to share in small ways or large ways, gifts with the world, to say that nonviolence, peace, is a powerful way to live on the planet. And how often do you think of nonviolence and power in the same breath? It is a powerful way to live on the planet, to bring forth healing and transformation, and to bring forth an empowered sense of our own gifts. It frees us to share who we are and what God has brought us here to do. So Season for Nonviolence is one way to do that. I'm particularly excited about it because it is grassroots and because it started with a little idea that grew very big and has now spread to over 400 cities and 18 countries around the world. If you Google Season for Nonviolence, there's just under a million hits. 15 years. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. In 1893, a small almond-skinned man who had just become an attorney left India to go to Africa to see how he could bring his gifts into the world. And when he got to Durban, he saw the ugly face of prejudice for the very first time. This man had a first-class ticket for a train. And he got on that train and he sat down in coach, and there was a white passenger, probably several of them, but there was one in particular that disagreed with having him seated in the same area that they were. He went to the constable on the train and he talked about it, and Gandhi was kicked off of that train and his luggage was tossed out after him. I can't imagine what that must have felt like. A young man ready to go out and make a difference on the world, faced with that kind of prejudice and that kind of hatred. And so there he was, outside of that train, an angry man. He was angry. There had been an injustice, but he had a choice. He could grow bitter or he could grow better. And he made a choice to grow better. He made a choice to use the law. He made a choice to deepen his spiritual practices. He made a choice to include others. And something inside of him, spirit inside of him, moved and said, "You must be the change you want to see in the world. You do not fight violence with violence. No, you find another way." And so this man was triggered by an incident that would have had many people grow bitter. He was triggered in a way that freed India so that it could be a democracy, to free it from Britain, which at that time, believe it or not, that's not that long ago, was the power on the planet. And they did it without a gunshot. They did it without violence. Freeing India. Something amazing happened. He didn't do it alone. So he asked the question, where he said, you must be the change. You must be the change you want to see in the world. I think there's so much that we can learn from Gandhi. When are the times that you feel an injustice has been done? And where do you go with that? Do you have that moment where you're like, that person, what did they do that for? It's not fair. Those idiots in, fill in the blank. I know we don't talk about that in unity, but we do in our heads, don't we? You know, those are the times when we have that choice between bitter or better. Bitter or better. What shall we choose? Shall we choose the high road? Shall we choose to find that place within us that recognizes no matter who that other person is, that is us, we are one? Those are our teachings. Are they merely words? Or are they the way we live? My passion for spiritual social action is because it's a way to take the truths that we teach and put them into action. Friends, you and I can sit down and learn the five basic unity principles in less than an hour or two. But to live them takes a lifetime. And I love the season for nonviolence because it's a way to emerge. It's a way to express that which has taken those practices. So we are in a dance of awakening. How many of you like to dance? Oh, good. Sometimes I get people who don't like to dance. I know there's some of those, too. How many don't like to dance? Anybody? Okay, we can include you because there's always a little step that we can do. And is there anybody who's just not going to raise their hand no matter what? Because so anyway, it's a dance, right? Life is a dance. It's a dance. And I want to share with you a rather brief dance, three steps today. And that very first step is the step of agape love. Everything happens in a field of agape love. It's where the Holy Spirit moves. It's where we feel connected to another. It's where our hearts are open. It's agape love. It's what could have Gandhi say, be the change. In the book of Genesis, friends, in the very beginning, you are made in the image and the likeness of God. What does that mean? It means that the love and the wisdom, it's in here. We don't have to add anything. In fact, it was absolutely amazing to me. How many of you learned the 12 powers somewhere along the way? And you ended up with some favorites, right? A lot of people, their favorite power is love. Somewhere along the line, I'm not saying it's my favorite, but it's right up there at the top. Divine elimination. Yeah, most people laugh at that one. It's like, what? There's wisdom and strength and power and you like divine elimination? I love it. Because when we really get who we are inside, that God stuff, then all our work is to let go of anything that's not like that. Let it go. I have heard for years 100% of our spiritual journey, not 99, not 60, not 100% is about letting go of what no longer serves. When we do that, we are the love that we came here to be. The image and likeness of God. Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And he said, love, love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. The first step, loving the divine, loving life, loving God, that is agape love. We bring that out with the people that are around us to love each other just as we are. Could Gandhi love the man who tossed him off the train? Maybe the day he got tossed off the train, the answer was no, I'm guessing. But in time, he learned how to do that, no matter what, to learn to love the people that are pushing against us. Agape love. Friends, we talk about love and we use it in so many different ways. In India, there are nearly 50 names for love. Because when you say you love chocolate, it's not the same as when you say you love your granddaughter or your partner. It's not the same. And in this country, we talk about philo love, filial love, brotherly love. It's pretty easy to love the folks that agree with what we agree with, don't you think? You know, we get into trouble when we start having different points of view. You know, filial love is agreeing with those that are like us, our brothers, our sisters, our families. Of course, that's another topic. But it's easier to love those who are like us. There's Eros love. Oh, we know all about that. Valentine's Day is coming. Make a note of that, guys. Eros love. You know, and books have been written on that. But agape love is loving another just because they're here. Just because we share an experience of the divine. Just because we're here. Agape love is for everybody. So the dance starts with agape love and it moves on to the next step. And that is deep listening. And with the Season for Nonviolence, that's exactly what happened. There was a group of ministers, people within the religious science community, now Centers for Spiritual Living. I'll get it. Now Centers for Spiritual Living and Unity people. There were some social ministers who came together. And they sat down and they said, these principles that we've learned in Unity, they are so amazing. They've changed our lives radically, not just a little bit, not just incremental. We are different people because of these teachings. How can we share them into the world? And they knew they would not be able to bring Jesus and Buddha into our school system. They knew that, but they were in the question. And these people who have deep meditation practices, sitting in a circle, listening deeply, set their intention. And that's an important part of this journey. Setting our intention, you know that. And they set their intention to find a way to bring this out into the world. Just a couple of weeks later, and I love synchronicity, just a couple of weeks later, they were at a backyard barbecue and Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, was present. And the question was brought up in this space of deep listening. Arun Gandhi said, in 9 months, it will be the 50th memorial anniversary of my grandfather, Mahatma Gandhi. We have an organization that's dedicated to bringing these principles out into the world, and yet we haven't found a way to do that. Well, he's talking to a bunch of ministers. We're pretty good at talking about stuff. So this group of ministers said, what if we did something for nonviolence to bring those out? And then they noticed that the 50th anniversary of Mahatma Gandhi's death was only 64 days away from the 30th anniversary of the death of King. King, who had studied these principles with Gandhi. So why not a 64-day season for peace? An idea big enough that everybody can step into it with your gifts, your particular calling into the world to step into that. And thus, the season for nonviolence, the season for peace and nonviolence was born. Now, having an idea, we're good at that in Unity, aren't we? And getting it out into the world, two different things. But they knew Barbara Fields, who was connected with people at the United Nations, and the very first season launched out of the United Nations. The idea was to have maybe 12 different states issue a proclamation for the season for nonviolence that first year. It was an idea whose time had come. and it came into the world full on. Nearly 40 states had proclamations in that very first year. And friends, when the idea comes from deep listening, it's a God idea. It's a divine idea. And it met all that nice hippie energy that was ready to go out and make a difference. And by golly, it ignited something at a grassroots level. And that's why there are 400 cities today that are involved in this. Now, I kind of need to go fast forward here a little bit, because the next step is to go back to agape love. When we bring something out into the world, it's going to meet resistance. There will be obstacles. We can plan on it. You know, we don't say, oh, yes, and I'm going to create these obstacles. No, we have the vision, but the obstacles are there. And when the obstacles are there, we go back to agape love and we say, how then is Spirit calling me to move through this? What is there to release? How do we let this go? What's another God idea to bring this forward? Are we being redirected? You see, spiritual social action is different than social action. Social action is good, friends. It is to be out there making a difference, and there is a lot of good that is done that is social action. Spiritual social action comes from a place of remembering who we are, remembering who the people are around us, and listening deeply to God to say, how can I be an instrument? Use me, O God. I stand for you. Use me. And so that brings us then to the third step in the dance. After deep listening, we come into authentic action. And so I've been talking a little bit about authentic action already, getting it out at the United Nations, sharing it, inviting the youth to have programs. This year we have programs with, spiritual action. I think there's an app for that. They're having a contest for the kids, for the folks that write those and those that are young at heart, to create apps for spiritual social action. How cool is that? What a great time to be alive. So putting it into action. And I want to talk just a little bit about the particular way of putting things into action to keep it spiritualized, and so that we're not in a place where we're walking down a path that is going to run us into more obstacles than we need. When we're in service to the divine, when we are instruments to the divine, we get redirected. Our hearts open up. The ideas that we put out attract other people who are excited about those ideas. All of that is happening when we're in service. Now, to look at service just a little bit, I want to take a look at two other things, and that is helping. How many of you think it's a great idea to go out and help somebody? You know, most of us do. And then I heard from a woman named Rachel Naomi Raymond. Maybe some of you know her. She's a medical doctor. And she was a doctor who had a chronic disease, so she was also a patient a lot. And she noticed how, as a patient, she was a thing. The doctors were there helping her. So I just want you to stay with me on this for a minute, because she came to a new realization of help. She said, when you help someone, you are seeing that person as having something you do not have. You're seeing that person as someone weaker or less capable, or in that moment not having something that you have. Friends, I'm not saying that's bad. It's just simply being aware that when we're helping someone, we're not on a level playing field. So we build it in automatically. When we're helping, that there's a disconnect. And when we do that, we're no longer seeing that person as one with us. Do you follow me? So when we're helping someone, there's a disconnect. When we're helping a lot, has anybody ever been burned out? when we're busy helping and giving and giving, we say, oh my goodness, I've been giving and giving. How come I feel so drained? If we're serving someone, we're serving an equal. We're seeing that that person has gifts too. They may be different. It's like the top and the bottom of a hand. They have different ways of moving, all part of the same hand. If I want to close my hand, the muscles on the top are going to be moving while these are releasing. Same thing when we're serving. Now we see someone as an equal. This person has gifts too. I have gifts. How are we going to flow with our gifts? You see, there's a subtle difference, but it makes all the difference. It allows us to take on huge projects, soul size projects, and without the fear of burning out. Because now we're in the flow. We're letting Spirit move through us. And that's what serving is about. There's another word I'd like to bring into this, and that is fixing. Anybody ever been fixed? I'll bet you like it as much as I do. We don't like to be fixed because that implies that something is broken. And when we're in this world-changing time that we're in, this evolution of Spirit moving through us, we're not here to fix one another. We're here to see one another as belonging, as connected. Another story that Rachel Naomi Riemann uses is she was out walking her dog with a friend, a woman named Marion. And Marion's walking, and she had a dog, and she had to put the dog down because it had become ill. But she loved dogs. So when they'd go walking on the beach, she always carried her doggy treats with her. And so no matter whose dog it was, that dog would get a treat. And Rachel commented on that one day, and she said, how come is it that you give all of these strange dogs treats? And she said, you know, I don't see them as strange dogs. They're all my dog. I love dogs. They belong to me. Just for that moment, I give them a treat. That sense of belonging. Friends, that's what we're talking about with the kind of service that will actually create a world that works for all. And then those being served have the opportunity to give back. Then those being served are empowered. And pretty soon, the line between those that are serving and those that are being served blurs. And the whole world. You know, there's no accident that dog is God spelled backward, I think. And those of you that are cat people, I'm not sure where to go with that. But it's that blending and that oneness. This afternoon, we have a workshop to invite you to look at, for you personally, how you're called to serve the greater awakening that is happening on the planet. I hope to see you there. God bless you.